She inspires, educates, and informs. She talks the talk and walks the walk. She doesn't tell you what to think. She just wants you to. She's Mrs. Green. And this is Mrs. Green's World on the Mrs. Green's World Network. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. This is Gina Murphy Darling, and you are listening to Mrs. Green's World, a fun and informative place where we don't tell you what to think. We just want you to. And there's so much good stuff to think about. Thanks so much for joining us. And thanks to one of our very important partners and sponsors, the Fairfax Companies, true leaders in the business of sustainability, and I can attest to that. They are dedicated to improving the environment through creative and innovative business practices. And trust me when I say they are making such a positive impact both on the business community through creating green jobs, real sustainable green jobs, and on the environment because of their dedication to recycling and post-construction waste and their gift of the most highest grade organic compost that money can buy. Thank you, Fairfax Companies, for believing in, supporting the message of Mrs. Green's World. To find out more, visit them at thefairfaxcompanies.com. So everybody, I'm just going to invite you to take a deep breath and get ready for this next hour, and I am so not kidding. John Knox is the executive director of the Earth Island Institute, which strives to provide grassroots solutions for a healthy planet. And that just really doesn't explain all of what they do, because it should just say massively grandiose, important grassroots solutions for a healthy planet. The Earth Island Institute was founded in 1982 by a visionary named David Brower, who had many, many passions, and one of them was this great planet of ours. John is here to share with us some of the history of the early days and what kinds of impact the Earth Island Institute has had and continues to have through their work. John, you can tell by my voice that I am extremely excited to welcome you to Mrs. Green's World.
Gina, it's such an honor to be here.
Well, we have lots to talk about. I mean, you know, I use the expression of going down the rabbit hole, and I was like one click away from the next best questions for about 2.5 hours. It's like, oh, I've got to ask him about this. I've got to ask him about this. But I'm taking a deep breath myself, and I'd like to start in the very beginning, and if I may, read a quote, because I think it really does capture the uniqueness of this organization that sets it apart from what I know, all others. So here's the quote. The general idea was to provide a home for people who had an interesting new strategy for saving the earth. Encourage them, offer administrative support, process grant money, give advice when asked for it. Earth Island would be a new kind of service organization, a temple for all the people doing good, in the words of Herb Gunther, of the Public Media Center, which is a nonprofit ad agency that was instrumental in getting the Institute started. So, John, tell us about the vision and the purpose in those early days, and try to weave Margaret Mead into that story, because doesn't she show up in a lot of places? I mean, she really does. She has quite a lasting impact.
Well, it's hard to go wrong quoting Margaret Mead.
Right?
In the early 1980s, so much was going on, and David Brower was then about my current age, about 70, and as it turned out, there was a new chapter coming up for him, because he was a feisty guy, and he had some challenges with even the organizations that he had created. So starting in 1982, there was a new organization created, Earth Island Institute, to do some of the work that Dave and his many followers were interested in. And then as it turned out, Dave's other organizational arrangements faltered a bit, and suddenly a number of us here in San Francisco were stepping into the Earth Island Institute lifeboat. And this was really... we had no business plan. The impulse was to take Dave's experience with his previous organizations, namely the Sierra Club and Friends of the Earth, and to see what we could learn about the important niche that we could occupy, namely to be a kind of launch pad, a kind of incubator for activism. to have the mechanisms of an organization be secondary, we hope, to the objective of providing an organizational home for people making a difference, which I think is the language that you use as well. So in 1986, we suddenly found ourselves, this few years after Earth Island had been founded, with a organization that was filling with people who wanted to do things. And so we embarked and got an office and had an organization and started publishing Earth Island Journal also as a way for our grassroots supporters to connect with us. And we started growing these various organizations which were under our sponsorship. There's a mechanism called fiscal sponsorship by which activists can come under a larger organization and without having to go through all of the detail work of building and then maintaining a 501c3 public interest organization. So Earth Island is one big organization. Well, it's turned out to be larger than it was at one time. And we have under sponsorship 70 projects currently, some of which have been with us from the very beginning, but along the way, we've also spun off a number of organizations, and that's certainly what we're about. When Rainforest Action Network started with us in those early days, we had no idea what a great force it would become, and it was one of the many organizations that have spun off. But again,
wow.
After 150 such experiments, we have about 70 projects currently. And so really we're about growing environmental leadership for the world that we can all live with. And over the years, in addition to Earth Island Journal, in addition to the pretty dynamic world of project sponsorship, we do a lot of work in the space of youth recognition and mentorship, and we have kind of an annual cycle called Brower Youth Awards, which we began in the year of Dave Brower's death, which was 2000. He knew about this and was very excited about it, and Dave was always out there hanging out with young people, listening to them, and saying yes. And that's really the kind of thing that we've tried to exemplify with Brower Youth Awards, and it's one of the best bets that we ever made. So we're a mixture of this work with the earliest emerging youth leaders. We work with grassroots members and readers and so on through Earth Island Journal and through our web resources, and then we continue to have this stable of projects that are under sponsorship, and as you've said to me, it is a little overwhelming to see all of the interesting things that we have going on.
And things that are just, that we should all be so grateful for, because we get to enjoy his largesse. I mean, it's when I read one of the quotes that I have to read, kind of, it might like sum up his personality a little bit, and I will probably use it on Twitter, ask my social media team to capture this one, especially now. Polite conservationists leave no mark, save the scars upon the earth that could have prevented had they stood their ground. Is there ever a more relevant quote than right this minute for that? We can't be polite and calm. We've got to find our voices.
Well, Dave had many facets over the years. He was in many ways on the cutting edge of expanding the environmental movement from the original capital C conservation work with landscapes and habitat and so on. And he was a great champion of that, and he was a great publisher, and that started really going back to the 1930s. And then as he evolved over the years, one of his huge strengths was listening, and listening particularly to young people, about where we all ought to go next. And so in many ways, looking at Dave's career is looking at the evolution of the environmental movement as it moved into so many areas, and it is truly now a huge force in the world that many people understand rather poorly. But it's we've, with our project sponsorship, tried to be out there listening, and we try to take on people. We really focus on our leaders rather than the particular subject matters, which is part of our challenge with people saying, well, wait, are you a marine conservation group, or are you a group that looks at sustainable food and food security? We do all of that because of the fact that we really do focus on leaders who are rising and who deserve our support and our promotion.
And as part of his legacy, I mean, I really was, I'm so not exaggerating, down this rabbit hole of what an incredible organization. And this man, you know, he basically, from what I read, we have the Sierra Club today because he breathed new life into it. He brought it into its own, and what a legacy that is. And then all of the things he did in terms of, like, he kept dams out of Dinosaur National Monument and the Grand Canyon. I didn't even know there were going to be dams in the Grand Canyon, which matters to me since it's in my state. And then Point Reyes National Seashore. I mean, this man was busy, like really busy.
Well, he was very, I mean, he was so interesting because inherently he was pretty shy. But there was so much that turned him on about the natural world that he became a dogged communicator. He was really a serial media innovator before there were those terms. And he was making movies in the 1930s. He was publishing books all through the 50s and 60s with Sierra Club. And because he was such an elegant guy, an inspiring guy, people would flock around him. And then his organizations were way, he loved organizations, but he wanted to make sure that they were doing what organizations should do, which is to multiply the energy and impact of individuals. So his is a whole interesting history of his sojourn through different organizational forms, and we tried with Earth Island to be his last and maybe most effective organization, and I hope we've been able to do that in the 16 years since his death. But the deal is that just been head down doing this work, working with grassroots folks, and we want more people to know about us and to help us shape how we're able to be of service in the future.
And my thoughts were, when reading that, to your point, it's this man and all of you that have taken over this organization really work and strive to make things, to remove barriers for people and passionate causes and great ideas, because it can be so daunting when you are a startup or even, you know, a continuing organization seeking federal funds, watching out for grants, and you don't make it a requirement that there's a minimal organizational budget. Some of those things, to me, are, those are the seedlings that you don't know if they're going to grow into a big oak tree or fly in the wind, but you give them a chance.
Oh, sure. And we've taken a lot of risks, and we've had projects that have started to rise, and then maybe the project director has a new idea that she wants to do somewhere else. And we're all over that. We want to be supportive of the innovators, and we want to take risks. And we have people who are challenging sometimes, and we love that. We like to be an organizational resource that deals with challenges and helps people figure out that vision thing and then help them to make an impact in the world. And so when a project comes to us, in general, we don't do one-off things. We want people who are going to be with us for a while. And if they're saying, even at the beginning, well, I think I want to spin off in year three, well, we've done a bunch of spin-offs over the years, and we're actually pretty good at doing that if you look at the mechanics of moving things from one organization to another. But we actually have some projects that have been with us for more than 30 years. And So we're not just an incubator that throws
right.
people out after a year. We want to be of service for however long the fit works for us and for the project. And it's a really great history.
And the programs and the fundraising, from what I understand, each program does that individually. But another impressive thing to me is that you really do leverage the power of the connected network of over 70 projects. How do you orchestrate that?
Well, that's really been an add-on. I feel like I should give a couple of specific examples.
I would love that. That's my next question, like John Knox's top 10 favorites.
Well, we don't have favorites, but we have substantial history. So, for example, going back to the latter 80s, there was a problem with dolphins being killed by the tuna industry. And we took a leading role in stepping in. Everybody assumed that other activist groups already had that covered, but guess what? It wasn't true. And we came up with a campaign, and we were the folks that brought you Dolphin Safe Tuna. And that project, the International Marine Mammal Project, is going strong today and has had various other chapters over the many years. Another one that's been with us for more than 30 years is the Sacred Land Film Project, which is all about telling the stories of Native people's struggles with land, which for them is a spiritual wholeness. It's not a commodity, and so there are lots of amazing stories to tell about that, and our project director, Toby McLeod, is actually at Standing Rock today. So those are some of the well-established, long-standing projects. We have a project that came to us a few years ago called Food Shift, and this is a great woman named Dana Fraz, who, when she was in college, became obsessed with how much food was being wasted in the cafeteria of her college, and it's become the passion of her life to see what she can do to intervene in our food system and make sure that we're not wasting food and make sure that food, perfectly good food, is getting to people who need to be fed. So we're very proud of what Food Shift is doing in the Bay Area, and we're in many ways kind of following Dana because she's, a great innovator. She's working on a kitchen these days, which will employ and train folks who really come from homeless backgrounds, and train them in culinary skills using food, perfectly good food, maybe it's ugly vegetables or whatever, to make food products that can be sold and generate revenue, essentially in a business, but it's a public interest business. So we see these ideas all the time, and we grow by perhaps 6 or 8 projects a year, and it's a dynamic process.
And what So you have a hub there, you lucky duck living in that area, because you've got Ben Simon with the Imperfect Produce movement that he is fueling. Mm-hmm. I've had him on the show. Invited me to be on the National Food Recovery Network board.
Oh,
so
really?
I am so aware of that and what he has done with Imperfect Produce. I love having him on the show. I could do probably a weekly show with Ben Simon because he's really old, maybe 27. I'm not sure. And, he started the National Food Recovery Network on college campuses. But it does speak some of the issues that are ever evolving. So you have the dolphins being killed, and, it's still an issue. So I'm sure there's not an end to that story at this point. There's still, horrible footage out there on the internet for the slaughtering of dolphins, and we are so proud to have a dolphinarium here in Arizona. I'd like to slam that every chance I get. It's awful. It's awful, and we were protests, and I had some people on the show, but as Dave would say, there's lots of work to still be done. We're going to
as he would say, in our field, there are no permanent victories. So
so true. It's so true. Yeah. Don't keep your eye off any of those balls. We are remarkably up on the first break, which that seems like it was about 5 minutes. So we'll be right back, and I have lots more questions, and I would love you to share about more of the projects and more about the youth leadership. Everybody stay here with me.
Join us for a new on-demand podcast every week at MrsGreensWorld.com. Listen on your computer or mobile device using the iHeartRadio or SoundCloud mobile apps. We are a proud member of the iHeartRadio, Glimmerglass, and SpeakUp networks. Connect with us on Facebook, Twitter, Pinterest, and Instagram. Stay in touch with information about healthy living, sustainability, contests, and events by signing up for our e-newsletter on our website. If you have questions or comments about the show, write to us at info@MrsGreensWorld.com. We'd love to hear from you. But right now, back to Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. I'm Gina Murphy-Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thanks so much for being with us. Joining me for this hour is John Knox. He is the executive director of the Earth Island Institute. And what we're talking about is grassroots solutions for a healthy planet in so many far-reaching and critical areas of impact. The general idea of Earth Island Institute was to provide a home for people who had an interesting new strategy for saving the Earth, to encourage them, offer administrative support, process grant money, give advice when asked for it, and to create a new kind of service organization, and indeed they have. John, thanks so much for being with us.
Great pleasure.
So tell us about I would say, you know, we talked a little bit about what I call the buckets. You have kind of three buckets: fiscal sponsorship, capacity building, and community support. In terms of fiscal sponsorship, just let me understand it. Do you serve as like a clearinghouse for those agencies, and are they under your 501c3 umbrella, or how does that work?
Yes. It's pretty easy to understand. Many people understand what a 501c3 organization is. It's one of those organizations that people can make tax-deductible donations to. And so to make it very simple, you can just think of Earth Island as one, as a single organization that has many different departments. Now, these are not all departments down the hall from us here at the Brower Center in Berkeley, but we have many different projects around the planet, and those number about 70. So each of those projects is led by either an individual or a team, and we hold them accountable for their work, and then we provide these services to them. So you were asking in the last segment, well, what about the community? I think in the history, at the very beginning, we only had the idea, we just want to make sure that we're a home that's useful to these activists. And I think there was certainly a history of some great individual activists like Randy Hayes, who was starting Rainforest Action Network, or Marc Dubois, who was starting International Rivers at the time. You know, great charismatic leaders. And they were doing their own thing, and that was natural. And we at the center of Earth Island, we really had just a couple of people who were helping all of this to get going. We were imagining at some point that there would be more interaction among the projects, but it was understandable that because we were so decentralized that that would be a pretty significant challenge.
Right.
The really interesting thing that's happened in the last few years, part of it is with all of the rise of the new technologies for collaboration and social media and so on. We do have every couple of years a summit meeting of our project directors, and we have one of those coming up in the fall of 2017. And we've got a lot of communication going on virtually in the meantime with webinars and so on. And it's really interesting to see, in particular, that the experienced leaders see it as something they want to actively do, namely to hook up with the emerging leaders who have questions and have visions. And so there's a lot of sharing that goes back and forth. I think it's not only that More experienced people have something to impart to younger folks. I think it works the other way, too. So it's been really inspiring to see this emerging web of connection among our projects, in addition to the power of the individual projects working in areas like food security or environmental restoration in San Francisco Bay.
And it's, you're right, so much about the changing technology allowing some pretty great things to happen. I'm a big fan of Bioneers, and I go to their conference each year. And one
yes,
of the
of course, that's actually where we met. Yes.
It is awesome. I'm sure that's where I heard about you.
Yes.
One of the most incredible things to me is that they, like the seminars that they put on prior to the conferences, if you, you know, I got into several of them this year and the year before, but they do, there's some pretty creative, innovative projects going on around the country in particular, where projects are funded and someone has had the wisdom for these big federally funded projects that impact the environment to bring the project leaders together so that mistakes that have been made might be avoided, so that you're really cashing in on all of the accomplishments of the project. So I applaud that. And I want to ask you, your website is like over the top. It's like I was drooling, let's be honest. It's so easy to navigate. It's beautiful. It's content rich. And I caught a clever quote from one of your outstanding infographics, and it was very cute. It said $1.17 million are rescued from the admin landfill each year. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? You mean you're saving a lot of money because of the collaborative structure?
Right. That's so great that you noticed that and picked up on it.
I did.
It's something, you know, we're working on evolving the website, and we're looking at new ways to tell our story. One of the content gems is that if you compare projects under sponsorship at Earth Island with freestanding little 501c3s or modestly sized 501c3s, it costs them a lot more to do that stuff out there than it does for us at Earth Island to produce one IRS Form 990 rather than 70 IRS 990s. And so we did a little calculation of what that impact might be. How much do we save in terms, really these are in terms of charitable dollars, because people support all of these 70 Earth Island projects, and so for every $1,000 that goes into making a project effective and so on through a through a donation source, whether it's an individual or a foundation or whatever, that effort doesn't have to put out money for things like an audit or for federal compliance or for the registration in all of the states for charitable solicitations. So those are things that happen at the center of Earth Island. And so we've tried, really this is, you know, what we now call the shared economy. How can we use shared resources to accomplish the same thing that perhaps some freestanding organizations in the past were the only way to go for organizing human activity.
And it's, as someone that's worked on boards and had a nonprofit and have been involved with them, it takes the energy of a lot of the leadership team and oftentimes the executive director, who should be out either raising dollars or spreading the message, to have to get involved in an audit and to pay for that. It's an unbelievable expense, especially to small organizations and also to large ones. So I was all over that one. That's probably why that little piece stuck out to me. Let's go back for a minute about the, it's so important to me personally and in my role as Mrs. Green, the initiatives that you're leading around youth, including the Environmental Leaders Award. It's so important for me to see young people celebrated and encouraged, and those that are providing leadership and committing to their communities, that they're recognized and celebrated.
Well, it's as I said earlier, it's been one of the great bets that we've placed starting back in 2000. What could we do within our movement to attract the attention of young innovators between the ages of 13 and 22 to compete through Brower Youth Awards for this recognition? Now, it's not a cutthroat competition. We hear from hundreds of young people, and we sort through and choose six folks every year for this amazing gathering that we have for a week in October that culminates in a big event at San Francisco's War Memorial Theater. The magic is that it's much beyond the six young people a year, even though those are great, great folks, and telling their stories in and of itself is a service to our movement and to the other young people. I mean, the point is that we are in touch with a lot of different young people, and we're trying to figure out what, beyond Brower Youth Awards itself, we can do to make linkages for them and help them to become the innovators of the future. I have a tiny story about that. Namely, there was a guy who got Brower Youth Awards this 2 months ago named Will Amos at UC Irvine. And he's a engineer, but he sees environmental engineering as a key strategy for solving our environmental problems, which is great stuff. And he's been working on the whole question of plastics recycling in the world of 3D printers. How about that?
But he's not
just a nerd. He's got social vision, and I connected him up with a woman who might be a future Brower Youth Award winner, who's working at the University of Arizona on bringing students together who just want to learn about the environment and tune into the resources on her campus. This is a huge public university with lots of different environmental programs, but nobody's concentrated on this question of, well, if students were interested in exploring and learning beyond taking courses and outside of the academic boundaries, what would that look like? So it's very exciting stuff, and I hooked her up with Will, and he was very excited to meet her. And so they're talking about this whole question about how you do mobilize students who want to learn about ecological principles, and right on their campuses there are these incredible resources.
And do you mind telling me who you connected with at the U of A? It's my alma mater and right down the street. Oh. So I wonder if I know. There's lots of people working there on the environmental issues, and I know quite a few of them. Do you remember?
Oh my God! You may have caught me short on.
I may have stumped John.
Oh no, I've got it. I just came back to me. Her name is Jessica Givens, G-I-V-E-N-S.
Well, you can be sure I'm going to look her up.
Oh, she's very talented, and you know, she's somebody who we know through other channels, and she's very interested in Brower Youth Awards. Even though she's an undergraduate, she came last year to Brower Youth Awards, and she had actually met Will. So, you know, we're playing around. How can we create some of these dynamic mechanisms? And really, maybe we create the mechanisms and stand out of the way so that young people can connect with each other. And it's been so interesting for us with the 90-some Brower Youth Award winners now in our history. They are now hiring each other. Some of them go on to become Earth Island project directors, which is something we really love. And so, because I think it demonstrates the power of our system in terms of dealing with the most grassroots of people and then trying to help people who are stepping up and saying, well, what if I did this? So anyway, we're trying to figure out how we can be more effective with grassroots people and with people who are actually stepping up and say, I have some time and I have some resources and I want to make a difference.
And we need to invest in them. And I was absolutely thrilled to find there was a winner from Flagstaff, from NAU, Karina Gonzalez, for this year's winner. And I'm like, I was reading about what she did, and I'm sitting there thinking, she cannot be much older, like maybe 21, and she's doing things like running the campaign, pushing the university to divest from the top the 200 coal, oil, and natural gas corporations. I mean, the things that she's doing, handling key negotiations with the university president, those kids, as I call them, I pretty much call anyone under 50 a kid these days, but she is delightful and powerful and, you know, really raising her voice. So, and in Arizona, we don't always make the paper for what I would consider good news. So it's really wonderful to celebrate her. And I will ask our show producer to get in touch with her, and maybe she will do a Down to Earth show, which we spotlight the Southwest.
Oh, that would be so
cool. Wouldn't that be great?
It's so interesting that you would mention her. I was trying to prepare for our interview this morning, and I was picking up the new issue of Earth Island Journal, and there is a column by Karina Gonzalez in the back of Earth Island Journal.
I'll check that out.
And
I subscribe to the journal, by the way. It's like, okay, I need more of this on a regular basis.
Well, we're trying to incorporate youth voices, and this is, I think, a great example of how we use our 56-page quarterly magazine to tell, you know, the stories of what's urgent and emerging in terms of issues, and also giving voice to younger folks through our New Leaders Initiative, which puts on Broward Youth Awards. So, Karina is a very exciting young woman, and we're trying to tell the stories of people making a difference in order to help other people think that they too can make a difference and step up.
And that support is so critical. I'm sure that at some junctures, it really created a critical path going in the right direction because of the things that you're doing. It's very affirming, especially when you're young. And switching a little bit to another project, living in Arizona, a state that borders Mexico, another one that jumped out at me is the restoration under the restoration project category. And I loved this, and I sincerely mean that. It said One River, Two Nations, and it's the Tijuana River Project. So what's happening with that? It was a wonderful story. Your website tells stories, compelling stories that you want to read to the end.
Well, again, a lot focuses on individuals, and of course we can say individuals make a difference, and of course teams are even more effective often, but there's a guy named Oscar Romo. We have a special project involved with environmental restoration in the whole Southern California area from Santa Barbara south all the way to Tijuana. And in the course of running that restoration initiatives program, we got to know Oscar. And he's a very interesting character. He's really kind of a binational guy who spent a lot of time back and forth between Southern California and Mexico. And guess what? Environmental issues don't respect borders.
Exactly. They didn't know that we're in the United States now.
So Tijuana River is a big mess. And it has to do with pollution from both sides of the border. And whereas we discovered Oscar through one of our special programs, he became a project director, and his project is called Alter Terra, and he's gotten a lot of attention because of working on very concrete upstream solutions in the Tijuana estuaries. One of the things that people notice is, when you have a lot of rain, there are big problems in the lower area of the estuary in terms of habitat for fish and other creatures because of the huge amount of pollution, toxics, as well as just soil runoff. And so maybe you can try to fix things down in the estuary, but if you go upstream, you can find that there are some opportunities for solutions to reduce runoff, to have, they use the term Alter Terra, and I guess there's this question, can we look at landscaping in ways that will reduce the runoff, hold the water in the local ecosystem, use it for growing useful or decorative plants, and enhancing habitat. So that's Oscar's gotten a lot of attention and is a very powerful figure. And again, he's got a little team that he works with, and we're very proud to be part of that story.
And working such incredibly important work for all of us. As you said, we don't know any borders when we're a river. It's can't say that enough. We're going to take another break. It's like, you know, okay. Time flies, really flies when you're having fun learning. Everybody, please stay here with me. More from John Knox from the Earth Island Institute. We'll be right back.
Mrs. Green's world's mission is to preserve the planet by creating a global community of people who care about the health of the Earth. We educate, inform, and inspire. Mrs. Green's World is an independent, non-political, agenda-free voice. Your generous gift enables all of us to explore the issues facing the health of the planet in a comprehensive way. As a Mrs. Green's World sustainer, you can assist us in offering trusted information, providing listeners with the tools to make their own conclusions and choose their own steps to create a healthier planet. Visit MrsGreensWorld.com and click on Become a Member today.
Welcome back, everyone. I'm Gina Murphy Darling, and this is Mrs. Green's World. Thanks for joining us. With us for this hour is John Knox, the Executive Director of the Earth Island Institute, and I encourage you all to check out the Earth Island Institute at earthisland.org and on Facebook at Earth Island Institute, on Twitter at Earth Island. And I would also recommend, if you're as excited about their work as I am, one way that you can support them is visiting the Earth Island website and sign up to receive their quarterly journal for only $10 a year. I couldn't believe that. And it will be money well spent, I'm sure of it. And I also was appreciative of the news updates, because sometimes in our traditional media, we don't get a lot of news updates about what's going on about the planet. So I signed up for the alerts, too. I was very busy this morning, John. I had a lot to do when I came to reading this. It's like, okay, I have to do that, and I have to do that. So I'd like to go, I hope I've been thinking about how to phrase this question. First of all, how long have you been the executive director?
Well, I think it's coming up on 30 years. We started this without titles, and at one point we settled into a quite serious office in 1987, and that was really when we got a little more organized. So it's been pretty much 30 years.
This is cracking me up, because that means you can answer my question very well. In just the 10 years that I have been in my persona as Mrs. Green, from where I sit, the emerging landscape in terms of the big picture of what I call, you know, climate justice, climate change, climate action, new issues are emerging for me that are of great importance, and specifically women's role in climate leadership, finding their voices and bringing more of a balance back to that messaging, and social justice issues. Like, I'm very eager now to cover social justice issues and how climate change impacts marginalized community. You have 30 years. I only have 10. What do you have to say in terms of changing landscapes, and do you see that?
Oh, yes. I alluded earlier to the fact that Dave Brower, as a young guy coming up in our movement, when he was also a mountain climber, that was really a huge part of how he connected with the natural world. Pretty much the only game in town was fighting to protect these amazing landscapes that people were just becoming aware of, whether it's the Grand Canyon or Point Reyes National Seashore, as you mentioned, or, you know, the Alaska wildlands. And, of course, that's crucial stuff.
Right.
But the movement, and I think we at Earth Island want to celebrate that movement and share that movement, it has become so interesting and so complex. And there's this interesting idea of intersectionality. And I don't know if this has come up for you in your other discussions, but there's this idea that maybe we ought to look at all of the systems of oppression and of dominance. There's a lot of unity between fighting corporations that are putting toxics in our environment, and then fighting against racism. And there are obvious, when you get into some of the fine points of some of these issues, as for example is the case with women around the world in coastal communities, they're struggling. Some of them have to move their whole villages.
Right, right.
Because of climate and because of sea level rise. And so we actually have a project that's focused on that called Climate Wise Women. And this is a bit of a roadshow. In other words, they've taken some key women leaders from around the world and made sure that their voices are heard on the internet and so on, but also in the reality of visiting major meetings, traveling together and working with activist groups. So it's part of the storytelling, namely that women in all of the communities are frequently the ones who make the most difference for local communities, and their voice needs to be heard. And very frequently in these circumstances of male domination, they're not given as much recognition.
Right.
So that's, I would say that the Climate Wise Women Project is a really interesting example of the conjunction of looking at environmental protection and looking at the climate crisis, which hasn't been in the public eye much before the last 10 years, and then the whole question of the rights of women and the empowerment of women in situations which are so often male dominated.
And another area, and it's funny, I feel like sending you a screenshot of my notes, because after the Tijuana River Project, I have Ask John about the Climate Wise Women Project, because I did read about that, and of course it caught my eye as a Climate Wise woman, and I was like, yeah. I loved hearing about that. What about another emerging trends that I see is a very active partnerships going on with leaders in the environmental movement and prisons. We really see, like in Tucson, there are wonderful things going on here, John. Wonderful. There are not enough hours in a day, but we have women and men working in creating organic gardens. I mean, there are so many projects bringing the prisoners' voices out in meaningful and strategic ways. Is that coming up on the radar for the Earth Institute?
Oh, Earth Island Institute. Yes.
Earth
yes,
Island.
Indeed.
I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yeah, the movement is very big, and it's hard for people to keep things in their heads. There actually is a place at Columbia University called Earth Institute, and so about four times a year, that confusion arises. There's also Island Press, and so people say, "Oh, I love your books,"
and you're not Island Press.
Is a great publisher, and there are sisters and brothers, so we're happy for that confusion. We have a project called Green Life, and people can find out about that on the Earth Island webpage. This is about, there are so many amazing programs going on at San Quentin. Lots of people outside of California have even heard of San Quentin. It's a very large state prison in Marin County, just north of San Francisco. And to the credit of the public interest sector in the Bay Area, there really are a lot of amazing programs to help prisoners redesign their lives and prepare for reentry, where that's part of the reality. And that's what Green Life does. They have been doing trainings really about kind of ecological principles and about gardening and about natural systems. And it's designed to help people envision what life on the outside might look like, especially if people want jobs that are connected to environmental restoration or food systems or whatever, some of these new areas where people are seeing that the provision of food for all of us can be in part a public interest activity, meaning it has a social purpose in addition to its sort of what you might call material purpose.
And with a project like Green Life, and I openly admit that I did not get to read extensively about all 70 projects, but things like that to me, are, it's one of those where it's the win-win-win. I mean, giving people that are incarcerated, many of them shouldn't be, let's be honest, that's coming out lots and lots more, kids who got, you know, a life sentence for possession of marijuana in Texas, those kinds of things are getting addressed. But to teach them literacy and eco-consciousness, I mean, it has to be among the most rewarding. And another thing I love about your website, if you're on it, there is a call to action. If you read about this project and it touches your heart, there's a one click away from supporting this project. And I believe your philosophy is $5 helps, $10 helps, $20 helps, $100 helps. So there's no contribution that's too small when you're out there doing this kind of work. And I'm sure you agree with that.
Yeah, and I wanted to just sort of reiterate, we are a portal for people learning about green life, or about All One Ocean, or about Alter Terra.
Right.
We do have a lot of great resources for people, grassroots people who want to connect with other grassroots people who are, you know, tackling some particular great thing. Something's just jumped out at me here. For example, we have a project called Junior Wildlife Ranger.
No way. I'm going to look that up.
This is a young woman who got the Brower Youth Award 2 years ago in 2014, I guess it was. And she was into how you have junior rangers involved as interpretive people at National Wildlife Refuges.
Amazing.
And so, you know, she was precocious. What should we say?
Yes.
And then there was the question, where's she going to go to school? So she chose this place in Massachusetts called Harvard. And so she's actually running this Earth Island project now. She's got a project. She moved over from being at Brower Youth Awards to being one of our projects called Junior Wildlife Ranger. And she's running that essentially out of her dorm room at Harvard. So
we need to stay tuned, because you'll be coming back and saying, Gina, she won the Nobel Peace Prize. So we have to get her on track for that.
She's in her quiet way, not unambitious.
Yeah, I would say. How old is she?
She's way up there at 18 or 19 now,
oh,
I think.
Goodness. Yeah. It not only blows me away, it gives me such hope. You know, I have a saying and a plaque in my office, children, the only future we will ever have, treat them well. And it just rings true forever and ever and ever.
I was digressing slightly. What I wanted to say is that we encourage people who might have a, you know, spark of, you know, inspiration for something like Junior Wildlife Ranger. We want people to connect directly with that project and consider supporting them financially. Now, at the same time, we also want people to look at Earth Island and understand that we really thrive when people also think about the Earth Island enterprise and say, I love all those things that you do, which work in synergy. Here's my money. So
yes.
It is the giving season, and we'd love to have people look at earthislandinstitute.org, and if they're able to share with us in this time of generosity, it's going to make a difference for all of these different kinds of efforts that we try to bring forth.
You know, you're the hub of the wheel that makes all the other things go round and round. I mean, clearly, it's such a great visual for me, because you're putting these projects together and doing what I love to call cross-pollination, which I think is so important, and kind of a unity of voice. I want to know if you have, in your 30 years experience and as your life as a citizen, do you think there are issues that are more compelling than others that really need our highest priority attention? Or do you think that anything, and I'm going to give you an example, I interviewed Heather White, who's now the new executive director of the Yellowstone Forever. They combined their foundation and their Friends of Yellowstone. And one of their big problems, believe it or not, is they have four, she said, people are loving the park to death, literally. It's 4.2 million people that come through that park, and you talk about a lot of wear and tear. So it's not exactly a parallel, but in terms of, you know, global populations and CO2 emissions and our overconsumption, are there any biggies that step, you know, just jump out at you that are of particular attention, you know, needing attention in your mind and experience?
Well, I think that one of our guiding principles is to encourage people to follow their passion and what they are in love with. And it may be that by looking at our website, people discover the problems with dolphins, but also something about the amazing world of marine mammals.
Right.
And we encourage people to go for that, and how can we help? But it's interesting also, looking back 30-some years, some of us, along with David Brower, cut our teeth on certain issues. So, for example, David Brower published Paul Ehrlich's original book called The Population Bomb about the question of population pressure as a key force in threats to the environment. Now, a lot of people of my age say, oh, yeah, that's so important. And there's a whole interesting history about the way in which that's kind of fallen out of favor. In other words, there have been some struggles with population planning and so on in developing world places that maybe have created problems for women. And, of course, ironically, that's the last thing they would have wanted to do. So it's a tough issue to kind of bring back into the discussion. Numbers are hugely important. It's not just fighting corporations because they're bad guys. That's something we have to be careful to pay attention to.
So true.
But also, we've got, you know, every family has impact, and big families have more impact, typically. And so we have a new project called Transition Earth that is trying in new ways to help people understand about family size, about women's choice in relationship to the size of populations, whether it's in U.S. or whether it's in Africa. And there's some very promising new strategies for helping people, helping communities to thrive with size families that work for the families, as well as for environmental protection, and then also economic security. All those things fit together. And so I would encourage your listeners to check out transition-earth.org, and we'd love to talk to more people about how we can make sure that we're paying attention to the question of human growth and the footprint on the planet. I think we just hit 7.8 million? I'm not
sure. We just know it's going up and up and up.
Yeah.
And I got to hear Paul Hawkins speak at Bioneers, and just, you know, he just said, I don't even know what to say. It was a wonderful speech, and of course he found lots of great things to say, but the population issue is one that's so real, and overconsumption, especially in the United States. It's one of my, I had this young lady, another woman wonder, trash is for tossers, and she lives in Brooklyn, and she has a zero waste life, and she's, you know, she's got 80,000 followers on Instagram. I mean, so there's a lot of, you know, it's resonating with a lot of the millennials, so that's encouraging. And we have about a minute left. I want to do a shout out for our show next week. It's called The Rogue Elephant, and it's Mayor John Brainerd, and he was six-term GOP mayor at Carmel, Indiana, and the only president, one of only four Republicans on a presidential task force on climate change. And I will be interested to hear his stories. And can you give us one call to action, John, as you get the last word? For listening to this, what would you say to someone? What's the one thing I can do?
Well, let's let's pay attention to Mother Earth. I mean, there's all this political division these days, but we do really need to pay attention to the system that supports all of us, namely through food, water, air, and that's not a partisan issue. And this may be something that people can come together to talk about over their holiday
turkey
dinners.
Yes.
Yes, indeed.
John, what a delight. Thanks, everybody. Pay attention to Mother Earth.